I think I'm going to version kit when I can't see the numbers. It's good.
After interrogating them, we compile that report But there is going to be a plan, an agenda as to what we're going to be doing for the rest of the year, so that people should know from now onwards what is going to be happening. It's a pity because it's a year that is going to be for the election, but it doesn't matter. We've started and we're not going to move back. So that is, I thought it was important to explain that particular area, member. So members, welcome, all of you. We're hoping that we'll have tea as we go along, so that as soon as we finish, we'll go to our planes. But I'm told the planes are very full. It's very difficult to get out of Cape Town because of people, which I only heard this week about people. Maybe it's because of my age, I couldn't follow people. But now I know there's people. It's because of people. So we'll have tea as we go along, so that people could have time to go on. So welcome, my children. I've got a wife. Got married because of the standing committee. By force. But fortunately, I don't have youth swimming. One of those who don't have youth swimming. So, welcome. I'm sure you could introduce yourself. Myself, I'm Vivian Kopana, and then we'll introduce ourselves and people for swimming.
I'm Lamonde Hapman, the chairperson for Social Services Select Committee. I have few apologies from the members of my committee, Honorable De Villiers, who's represented by Honorable Joseph over there, and Honorable Flaky, who's off sick, and the other member who has attended another meeting, Honorable Mushudi. I'm sure the others will join us as we continue with our meeting. Thanks for that.
Apologizing. First of all, Chair, appointment with the doctor. I think doctors, there are many here, they know if you miss appointment, I have to be there. So I'm going to leave earlier, Chair. And my name is Pam Tracy. I'm the member of this committee and from the African National Congress. Thank you very much.
I see you. Mom Copan says we are demented. I'm a sister subject. I give a sister to Mike Waters who says dementia. Okay.
Morning, I've been introduced, but I'm Dennis Joseph, NCOP, on the Finance and Probation Committee, and I'm standing in for Honorable Michael De Villiers.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Maurice Sekhalidi Swai. I'm a member of this committee from Health Portfolio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Patricia Kopani. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee of Health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. We'll give over to you. We've got a content advisor who has been very frustrated because there's nothing that he was doing since the inception, and they've been talking as they're sitting there, Moses Mwaga, that's the homeboy of Blake Romanda. You heard that comment?
What is it?
They're all short. No, we need to play some jeans that size and grow them, not so Moses. Moses is going to hit you outside. Welcome, Moses. We got your question. Thank you very much. I've got new people that I don't know that are coming from NCOC, so let me ask them to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Marcel Williams, and I'm the committee secretary for the Select Committee on Social Services and co-secretary for the Action Committee.
Okay. If that be the case, we'll give over to you, Jürgen.
Honorable co-chairs, good morning. Honorable members, good morning. I'm Jürgen Pillay from the National Department of Health. It's the DDG responsible for the HIV and TB and maternal and child health program. And my colleague sitting next to me.
Good morning, Honorable Co-Chairs, and Honourable members, my name is Farid Abdullah, I'm the CEO of SANAC.
Morning, Chair. I'm Freddy Makua from the Ministry of Health.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. On behalf of the DG, who is out of the country at the moment, she has asked me to convey her regret that she's not here today, and also that she welcomes the opportunity for us to engage with the committee. We hope that this could be an ongoing engagement from our side. Of course, the invitation came to the DG of Health, and historically, as the co-chair was mentioning, the Department of Health was a custodian of SANAC, and SANAC was within the department as one of the units in the department and funded from the department's budget fully through national treasury. But over time, there was a rethink of that positioning of SANAC, lastly to ensure that SANAC is seen as independent of both the Department of Health and of government, and to make it an organization that civil society, labor, business, and government can call their own. So now, though it's physically housed in the Department of Health, it is an independent body. And the CEO will explain the new structures of SANAC and who SANAC is actually accountable to, and the role of the Deputy President as well as co-chair. So while we in the Department of Health are a significant player in the HIV and TB and STI space, we are not the only player. And the intention of SANAC is to make this a national effort rather than just either a government effort or an effort by the Department of Health. And the CEO, therefore, who represents all the sectors in SANAC, and he'll tell you how many sectors there are, and not just the health sector. Of course, when people get HIV positive, the health sector has to take care of them. So, you know, we feel, therefore, are majorly important in terms of ensuring that patients who are HIV positive get the health care they deserve. And I'll contribute to the presentation as we go along, but he will make the main presentation. So with your indulgence, I'll hand over to Dr. Abdullah.
Okay,
Salim.
Once again, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity. If I sound a little nervous, it's because I'm not used to all these parliamentary things, but you know, I've got a very experienced government leader on my right here, so if I have any mistakes, I'm sure he will just point them out to me. If I could also just start by making one or two general remarks, as Dr. Pereira said. You know, although SANAC is now being repositioned by the Deputy President as representing all sectors and working with all departments in government, at the same time, you know, the lion's share of our funding comes still from the health department. So I think it's entirely appropriate that, you know, we be asked to present to you through the health kind of function. The second thing I'd like to say is that I've been in the job for 1 year, and in many ways the instructions that we have are to set up SANAC as an independent institution. So over the last 12 months, you know, we've tried to put the basic or institutional arrangements in place. We've been able to make a lot of progress in that regard. And I could just make a general comment, and I'll go into a little more detail later, that SANAC is a council. It's a voluntary association of people chaired by the Deputy President, and it brings together parties, but it's not a juristic person, and it's not a legal person. However, in 2002, the council, the deputy president at the time, and the health minister, created the SANAC Trust, and that's the legal framework under which SANAC should have been operating. It has not been operating really effectively under that trust for a range of reasons,
And that's why the health department has very kindly carried this project for 10 years or so. But we have had some changes now, and the trust is functional. And in fact, we have a new set of trustees who have just been appointed. And now I think we can much more describe ourselves as a trust that's carrying out the objectives of Senate, the council, and also the objects of the trust that's contained in the deed. But I'm getting ahead of myself. If I could just go quickly then through the presentation. Your real request, I guess, was for you know, getting a feeling for how much progress we're making with the National Strategic Plan. So we'll start with that. And then talk a little bit about the general financing environment and the efforts we are making to raise the funds needed to implement the very ambitious NSP. Then I'll talk a little bit about the new structures of SANAC. I really hope that Dr. Pillay will help me through some of these slides and add, because he's been so closely associated with the actual implementation, and a large part of the implementation has to do with health. So, Jovin, please jump in. So once again, to remind you, this is a strategic plan on HIV, STIs, and TB. This is a big change from the previous strategic plan, because TB did not really feature prominently in the previous one. And Chairperson, your opening remarks about the co-infection between TB and HIV were really on the money, so to speak, because this plan really also tackles TB. And we have a slide later showing the mortality statistics from TB, which also helps to make that point. Now, instead of repeating our presentation that we made to you at the workshop that you have, which described the NSP, we want to talk a little bit more about the content of it. So the NSP is made up of four strategic objectives. So this is strategic objective one, and it's about the structural drivers. Because we know that we've made a lot of progress with treatment in this country and prevention of mother-to-child transmission. But really what we have to tackle now is the new infections. And those things are driven from outside of the health sector. And they're driven by intergenerational sex and transactional sex. In fact, a large part of new infections in this country are in young women between the ages of 15 and 24. And it's largely driven by this intergenerational and transactional sex. Now, on this, in May, on the 25th of May, the Deputy Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, together with SANAC and a partner called John Hopkins Program, which I think you might be familiar with, will be launching a campaign called the Zazi Campaign about educating young women to assert themselves in a situation where they're exposed to intergenerational transaction sex. That will be a six-month campaign. But these are the sorts of campaigns that we want to start engaging on. The second, gender-based violence, as we know, sexual assault is a big subject in this country, and it's also a big driver of HIV new infections. In this case, I think the stellar example of how to deal with this is the Tutuzela sexual assault survivor centers. There's 52 in the country. There's a run by the NPA and the health services, and we are working with the NPA to strengthen these. I'll tell you a bit more about it if you we have the time. Strengthen these and to raise additional funds to strengthen the Tutuzela centers. About 2 months ago, I went to the new hospital in Kailisha, where there's a Tutuzela Rape Survivor Center, and they had a staggering statistic there. They said that their conviction rate is 100%. And that shows how powerful this intervention is. As you know, when the rape survivor goes to the facility, all the police documents are there and the evidence is collected properly, and that results in a good conviction. We also have a small project now looking at poverty. As we know, poverty is a big driver of HIV. And one of the things that the Department of Social Services is finding is that young women are not taking up the child support grant. There are large numbers of young women and they can't understand why. So we'll be working with them all the time to increase the uptake of the child support drug. There's been good studies to show that young women who take the child support drug is protective for HIV and for many other things. Then, as you know probably better than I do, we have a large life skills program in the school, and the Department of Education is busy with a new policy. And then we have a small project funded by the US government on parenting skills, because they found that one of the weaknesses globally is that parents don't have the skills to educate their sons and daughters about how to deal with sex and HIV, sexuality, violence, and this is a project which should start quite soon to train parents, and there'll be a large number that will be used to this. But once again, we want to convey the general idea that this strategic plan is not only health-focused, it is focused across many departments, and of course civil society plays a big role in this. If I can go to strategic objective 2, which is prevention, and I always say that this NSP is about prevention, because we cannot treat our way out of this epidemic. Dr. Pillay and his team, Minister of Health and his team, they are really doing a remarkable job to get people onto treatment. But every year we have 350,000 new infections, and the number needing treatment keeps going up. And we cannot do this. We have to, so to speak, close the tap by preventing new infections. These are the prevention programs that the NSP is focused on. The first is the National Sex Worker Program. And for the first time in SANAC, we have now done a study to estimate how many sex workers there are in the country. We will be publishing a report on that quite soon. But sex workers and their male clients are a big source of new infections. Then truck drivers. As you know, there are, I think, 200,000 truck drivers in the country, and there's a big a risk of HIV infection on the roads with young women, sex workers on the road. You just need to go to Kumasi Port border or any of the big truck stops on the N1 from Joburg to Cape Town. Then a neglected area is men who have sex with men, and we're working with the Global Fund to raise funds to provide additional services. Male medical circumcision, as you know, is a major prevention effect. It's now proven that circumcised men have a 60% lower risk of HIV infection. Once again, the Minister, Dr. Pillay, have been making a huge investment in male medical circumcision, and perhaps, Jürgen, you can add some numbers to that. But I believe that the target now has also increased to over 4 million to be circumcised by 2016. This would make us, I think, the largest circumcision program in the world. When it comes to the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, this is also a very effective prevention intervention, and South Africa is doing very well with a transmission rate of 2.7%. What has been a major new improvement is that pregnant women will now qualify for one pill once a day. And that makes the treatment more effective, and also it covers the breastfeeding period, which was a big problem in the past. We're looking again at the condom program, because we believe more can be done, and the Minister is hoping to relaunch the testing and counselling campaign that was held and was very successful. So some statistics. This is from a survey done by Johns Hopkins University. We estimate that more than 60% of all South Africans have actually had an HIV test. That's a pretty good result. Apologies for that. When it comes to strategic objective 3, this is the treatment objective. And once again, I'll ask Dr. Pillay to address some of these things. Except to say that we now have 1.9 million patients on treatment in South Africa. And over the next 12 months, the health departments will roll out the one pill once a day. And I think, Dr. Pillay, you expect that 80% of all people on treatment in April 2014 will be on the one pill once a day. There will always be some people who will need more than one pill. Now, one of the things that we found, and we've seen this not only in the treatment program, but we're seeing it in the clinical trials, the scientific trials, when it comes to microbicides, when it comes to pre-exposure prophylaxis. The single biggest problem with treatment is that people don't adhere to treatment. So we need to think very seriously in this country about how to improve our adherence. Not only when you are in the program, but also for all the new prevention possibilities that are now in the scientific world. If we have time, we can talk a little bit more about new possibilities for people who are HIV negative to take pills to prevent treatment, for people who are HIV positive to take early treatment to prevent transmission to other people. Those are all major scientific developments underway, a very exciting time for the scientists. But the bottom line is that you can have all the science in the world. If people don't take their pills regularly, nothing works. If they don't take a microbicide gel, use it regularly, nothing works. So as a country, we need to make serious investments in this area. This is where the community comes in. This is community-based work. It's with civil society, with NGOs, and government alone cannot do this work. And then with orphans and vulnerable children, you hear many wonderful programs. This morning on Morning Live, there was an interview with the director of the Shepan program, which takes care of young children, orphans. But our estimate is that psychosocial support for orphans is still very low. It's inadequate and doesn't reach large proportion. Once again, some more statistics then on the from the Department of Health. If you look at PMTCT, what we've done at the top is put the global target. As you know, UNA has set a global target to eliminate mother-to-child transmission by 2015. In South Africa, you can see the coverage for pregnant women is up to 99% now. Those are pregnant women who are getting treatment. The infants born to HIV-infected women receiving drugs is also at 99%. This is a very good statistic. Before I joined SANAC a year ago, I worked for the Global Fund in Switzerland, and I was responsible for 41 countries in Africa. And I can assure you that no other country except Botswana has reached this level of coverage for PMTCT. So we are really doing well, and I think the Health Department and the Minister of Health, you know, really should be congratulated, as they have been globally. This is the actual numbers for treatment. I mentioned earlier 1.9 million people on treatment, but our estimates are that that covers 75% of people who need treatment. So on the one hand, it's a high target, it's a high achievement. On the other hand, the NHP sets a target of 80%. So we still have a way to go to reach the 80% target. Then in the National Strategic Plan also puts a lot of emphasis on the legal framework and the human rights. And we are dealing, working very closely with the Deputy Minister of Justice, who chairs our human rights task team on strategic objective number 4, looking at the Sexual Offences Act. At our last meeting, the Deputy Minister brought his whole team and the Law Commission. I think this is where probably you will start to get involved, because in the end, these kinds of changes have a legislative implication and they will come through your committee. So that would be something I expect that you will be asking us to have a report on and a report on. And possibly even we'll ask the Deputy Minister to come and speak on the subject. He's passionate about it, but the progress has been slow in this area. Then we are working with the PLHIV sector of Sanak on measuring stigma in this country in a scientific and objective way with the view to dealing with stigma. And all of us who have had friends and family who have refused treatment or who don't really believe they are HIV positive will know that stigma is still a big problem in the country. In addition to that, we are looking at overcrowding in prisons. As you know, this is a big driver of TB, new TB infections in prisons, with an overcrowding rate of about 40,000 inmates. There was a paper published recently by Professor Robin Woods from the UCT showing that the probability of contracting TB in a prison if you are awaiting trial for 6 months is 90%. That means that if you are awaiting trial for at least 6 months, you're 90% likely to become infected with TB. And that's a major problem to deal with. And then workplace discrimination is a matter which continues to be a problem. And we're working together with a number of partners to look at a legal clinic to deal with these matters. Perhaps I should go a bit faster, Chairperson, just to remind you that the goals of the NFC are quite ambitious. To reduce HIV incidence by 50%. These are the big, high-level goals. 80% on treatment, with 70% of those on treatment alive after 5 years. So it's not just putting people on treatment, but keeping them on treatment. Reducing TB significantly, having the right human rights framework, and reducing stigma. When it comes to that high-level impact, this is a slide that shows HIV incidence, new infections every year, from 1990 to 2011, so that's a 20-year period. And as you can see, around 1997-1998, we had the worst period of new infections, with almost 700,000 people becoming infected each year. We're glad to say that that has come down by about 30-40%. And slowly coming down. Dr. Pillay has more data recently to show that that trend is both true and progressing. But the NSP calls on us to really focus much more on new infections. When it comes to antiretroviral coverage, as I said, there are 1.9 million patients on treatment, but the health department want to increase that by about 500,000 people each year for the next 3 years. Once again, that's a very ambitious target. And a new system is being rolled out to allow for tracking survival of treatment, which is called the tier.net system. That allows all patients to be on a database and they can be kind of monitored over time. At the moment, we can't really do that in the district health information. A big effort involving a lot of data capturing over the last since 2004. TB incidence, I won't say much on this except to say that we have a big problem here, and to push it down by 50% is going to take a special effort. These are the statistics from the Statistician General, which he released a short while ago, showing the number of TB deaths by province. Now, as Dr. Pillay always points out, most doctors, when they are recording the cause of death on the death certificate, they're still reluctant to say HIV, so they say TB. So this is not just TB, but a combination of TB and HIV. But the third suspicion General has reported is, and I think it's important to take it into account, because there are official statistics. But if you look at the right-hand column, in a province like KwaZulu-Natal, 15% of all deaths in the province are due to tuberculosis. Now that HIV is more under control, we are seeing the true scale of the TB problem underneath it. Let's talk a little bit about funds. This is a slide which the Deputy Minister of Finance presented to one of our SANAC committees about a month ago. And if you look at the column showing 2013-2014, the Treasury estimates that we will spend 24 billion rand on HIV and TB in South Africa. That's a substantial investment. But this also includes donor funding in the second last row of 5.7 million. It also includes the estimates of costs inside hospitals, inpatient care. So the health economists are debating this, and they say the true figure is that you have to minus those two numbers, and actually we're spending more like 13 billion. On HIV specifically. once again, Dr. Pillay might want to comment on that. And the conditional grant makes up the largest share of that. Well, that's just a bigger slide to show it better. I want to talk a little bit about the Global Fund in South Africa, because one of SANAC's functions is to raise funds from the Global Fund. And this is something that we have been very busy with a whole team of 20 people working on this. I want to give you a quick background to the Global Fund. So, we have five grants with the Global Fund, totaling 213 million. Those grants are coming to an end in October, and we have been asked to apply for a renewal of those funds. As you can see, the National Department of Health is the largest recipient of about half of those funds, 100 million in the top row. These are funds that have been actually disbursed. So on the one hand, the first slide is what they have approved for us. This slide is what they've actually delivered. And if you look at 2011, only $20 million was disbursed. But working with the Department of Health and the other principal recipients, this number has increased to just over 100 million. So there's more money flowing now from the Global Fund to South Africa. This slide perhaps a little too detailed. All these grants were unrelated to each other, and they were not related to the National Strategic Plan. We have now agreed with the Global Fund to align them up with the country's priorities. So I think we're getting a little bit of progress there on that. This is the proposal that we are putting to the Global Fund. We have submitted it about 4 weeks ago, and we will hear their reply. And it's for a total of $250 million over the next 2.5 years. But as you can see, it covers prevention, treatment, and a supportive environment. Once again, most of these funds will go to the National Department of Health, but a significant amount will go to NGOs for all of those programs. As you can see, hopefully, what we are submitting now is much more closely aligned with the National Strategic Plan. That's the good news. This slide is the bad news. And the bad news is that the US government is decreasing its funding to South Africa. And that decrease is quite significant, but it will be staggered over 5 years. And it will go from $548 million in 2011 to about $250 million in 2017. Dr. Pillay, Dr. Simulela, and myself are part of co-managing this transition. Now, in the case of PEPFAR, almost all of this money went to the NGO sector, and almost very little to the government sector. So this has an impact, a significant impact on the NGO sector. But there is some work in the Treasury to try to replace some of these funds. As I said, you can see the decline already in 2012, and it will go down slowly. PEPFAR wants to decrease its investments in treatments because it believes the government should pay for that, but continue with health system strengthening and with prevention intervention. So perhaps I should pause at this point and ask Dr. Pillay if he wants to make any comments. Yeah? Well, thank you for that. This is just a few slides on the new Senate governance structures. We have said many of these things, so I'll go through them quickly once again. So the important thing is that we start once again with the general statement of what is SANAC. So SANAC brings together government, civil society, and the private sector to create a collective response to HIV, TB, and STIs. The council is chaired by Deputy President Halema Matlante, and it meets four times per year. As I said earlier, we have a new trust deed which has been signed off by the Deputy President, the Ministers of Health and Finance, and the SARS Commissioner. We are busy registering that with the Master of the High Court as we are a trust. But these are the functions of SANAC, so I'll go through them. One is to foster dialogue between government, civil society, and all other stakeholders. That looks like these days it's less necessary, but if we know our history of 10 years ago, where there was so much conflict, we'll understand that, you know, we need to continue to make sure that we talk to each other. The second is to advise government. And here we're careful about the language, because sometimes SANAC may have agreements and make proposals, but the legal authority lies with government departments, and that's why we can only be advisory. And if it's a policy which, say, affects the whole of the NGO world, that's something, you know, that we can put an advisory note out. But when it comes to official policy, we have an advisory function. Then to strengthen governance, leadership, and management of the response at national, provincial, district, and local levels. We can talk a little bit about that. Strengthen the multi-sectoral response, including ongoing policy review, program management and coordination, technical assistance. Mobilizing resources domestically and internationally. But, you know, that's not an easy task because one has to estimate expenditure. And we have a costing task team of experts that is helping us to do this work. To estimate how much is needed, that's a complex task of building a model, a projection model, estimating, you know, what numbers will be in the future, and coordinating with donor funding. And then an important task is to monitor progress, and we're only in the starting block when it comes to this, to formally monitor progress, and then to create and strengthen partnerships, both locally and with international organizations. So this is the structure of SANAC. It looks a little more complicated than it is, but really the main committees are at the top, the plenary. That is the meeting that meets four times a year. That's the council. The reason we have an extended plenary once a year, one of those four meetings, is that the Deputy President felt we should invite the Premiers once a year to SANAC. And then there are two main committees, the NSP Financing Committee, which is chaired by the Minister of Health, and that committee on your left is the committee which has the overall oversight of whether we have enough money in this country, whether we need to ask Treasury for more money, how much we think we're spending, how much we think we need. And then on the right-hand side, the Program Review Committee. This is to ensure, these are technical experts, there's a lot of representation from stakeholders and NGOs. You know, if there are new technologies, if there's a scientific development, this is a committee which will say, let's change our policy, let's advise government to change it. At the bottom you have the secretariat, and then on the left, the trust board. I mentioned the trust, that's the legal entity which the secretariat reports to. The deputy president has recently appointed new trustees. You might have seen that in the media. And the chairperson of the new trust board is retired judge Zak Yakub. And we have already had our first meeting. It's a much more senior board of trustees. And we are very encouraged that, there'll be a lot of progress. Now, I just want to say, Senex sounds like a big organization. But actually, it's a coordination of a big effort. But at the Secretariat, we are actually a small operation. And I don't want to misrepresent that we are a huge, large institution which is going to solve all the problems. But our objectives are very clear now. And I think, we hope to achieve them slowly over time. In the first year, just to ask your indulgence for a moment, we did the basics. You know, we didn't have a bank account, we didn't have HR policies, we didn't have any finance or HR staff, the trust team was not functional. So we've been doing a lot of work on the institutional arrangements. And I'm glad to say that I think most of the basic systems are in place. The Auditor General is doing our audit at the moment, an interim audit, so we will see how much progress we made and what our challenges are. But I think we can now say that and we'll be able to report to our trustees properly on the expenditure and the performance. In addition to that, we have a civil society forum where all the civil society sectors come together. That's proving also to be very effective. We have 19 sectors in town, representing children, women, men. All of you have come across the SANAC sector. There's a lot of activity. The work going forward is to find a way to support the provincial councils, the local councils. I know that many of you are concerned about this, and I'm sure there will be some questions and discussions about it. I've already said too much, but it's the last slide. So really, in conclusion, I think we are looking forward to a more comprehensive response, with prevention being much higher on the agenda than it was before. I think there is very good progress with treatment and PMCCT. The multi-sectoral response needs to be strengthened. The Treasury continues to increase domestic investment in HIV and TB. We are raising additional resources from the Global Fund, but bilateral donors are decreasing their investment. And the new SANAC structures are working at the national level. Our challenge now is to make them work at the provincial level. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pillay?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, I think I will request the members to make comments and questions and any other issue they want to say on this presentation. And welcome Honorable Makunyan. Can I have a question? Yes, Honorable. Honorable Zisuai, followed by Honorable Treche, and followed by Honorable Mwemba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I've been longing for this meeting for some time. I think the Chairperson can better explain the idea of to be saying when are we meeting SANAC to hear what you are doing. And I'm happy to hear that the CEO saying the CEO admitting that they haven't done really, he's not satisfied about what they have done. They haven't done enough. Because I thought that it was my lack of non-information when I was saying I can't feel the AIDS cancer. I won't talk about SANAC when I say that I don't feel it. I will talk about the PCAs, the DAC, and the LEC, because that's where I am. I I can hear you talking, but I want to know really what the intake of the PCAs, the DACs, and the LNC. Is it there? Is it really that? Does it make an impact? Secondly, I would like to know on that, according to what I just said, do we have enough resources at the provincial, district, and local level whereby we can be saying that these people are doing impact? Do we have enough resources? When I talk about the resources, specifically at the offices of those at that level. I was initially, when we were talking, I was saying that when I could have came before you started and sit down and just listen on what you are saying, I wouldn't deduce that you are talking about Salah. Mostly you were talking about what I think is the Department of Health. I understand, but what I got it in slide 29, that's what I wanted, the goal of SANA and its data. I would wanted those goals to have been unpacked to be, because it would have told me what have you really achieved. Because yes, I understand those are your roles. And I would really know that when you foster dialogue between government, civil society, and all other stakeholders to oversee the country's response on inside, how are you achieving? Can you tell me what have you how have you performed? And it gives me the, because this helped on my oversight as the public representative. This goal, now when I get out of this, when I go to Northwest to see the PCA, I will be having this goal to be saying to them, this is your goal, how have you work around them? How, what have you achieved? And I would even want to know the challenges of the offices at provincial, like I have said, what are the challenges? So that, because as the public representative, we are not police. We have to go there and help and to make the East Council to really be in its feet and do what it's supposed to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me start by thanking the presenter for the very good, informative presentation. I'll start with this as a positive. The positive is that of the number of GM city percentages. And as I can say, I'm very happy to see the very good progress of the treatment in MPCC. The other one is the request that other cases have no number. That please next time make sure that you number all the pages, because it's very easy to refer when you have pages. But outside, without a page, is the key programs and budget allocations. Budget allocations, I've seen the organogram. I was in the health committee, but I'm no longer in the health committee. Now I'm in the social development committee. But because I like health, I always read, you know, what health is doing and also what TV. All everything that has to do with health, I watch it closely. But I'm looking at the allocations and I'm asking myself, under prisoner, are you, because I see the money for, I imagine the number of prisoners that we have in South Africa with the little money that we have for prisoners, allocation of prisoners. And I just want to check, how do you allocate the money? Because it's written prisoners. Do you look at those that have what challenges? And if you have a list of those that you, just an example, that you give money, I'll be very happy to see. It's same as a global fund, this statement. The National Religious Association, and I see that there's zero under 2011 and 2009. What is it? What does it mean to say zero? Does it mean that we might elaborate further to explain why you have zero under 2011. The last one, Chair, without wasting your time, is that I see the Okalo plan and I heard the chairperson saying, oh, I have two. It's on page 32. Page 32, the last bulletin is saying only 5 of 9 provinces have functioning provincial councils and aid. And I'm imagining the TB in all provinces and also the number of deaths that I saw in one of the slides. And I'm wondering, why are those four provinces, how come they do not have provincial councils, and what are the reasons of them not having provincial councils? Because I see a need in all provinces, that it's important that there is a provincial council. The last one, Chair, I said last, but I was hoping that one is the last. Chair, I think I know that we don't meet all the time, but when the Chair was opening, I'm not clearing the fact that he's saying we should meet every Friday. But I'm just checking, Chair, with the salad meeting 4 times a year. And we're meeting every Friday. Maybe that question is directed to the chairperson. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Most of my questions have been asked by my colleagues, but I still have many questions I want to hear with you. I just wanted to find out, according to the presentation, you mentioned about the TB incident, but when it comes to 2012, there's no statistics currently. Why we don't have the statistics currently? Maybe I missed when you mentioned that. My other question is relating to the expenditure. You did tell us about the expenditure on the programs and whatever, but when I check into the program, all the pages where you relate to the expenditure, I don't see you mentioning anything in terms of because for those programs to be enrolled, there's supposed to be a budget for administration, for the salaries, for the employees. So I don't see something of that nature. So I wanted to find out where is the budget for salaries and for administration. One thing that you mentioned again that is very interesting, you said that the U.S. funding is decreasing. It's a challenge that you are facing, but I wanted to find out, what is it that you are going to do to amend that funding that is decreasing? And how is it going to impact on the service delivery, or going to affect how in terms of the goals that you want to achieve? I think that's all, Chair. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. On page 5, the key program, the presenter mentioned several things like a national self-driver, but when they come to the allocation,
there's no more budget to let a truck driver for campaigns. Maybe I didn't hear clear. If they can explain more to us so that we must know. And even the main sex, men to men sex, and there's no allocation budget for them in 7 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just covered by most of the questions, but I want to know, I want to make a statement by saying that although the comment was it's not a youth department, it certainly represents the youth population. It's very important. That must give the importance to this department in terms of funding and the goals you've set out. But I wanted to know if this global fund, if it's only the first world countries or developed countries that contribute, or is Africa or South Africa also contributing towards the global fund? I also want to know when is this launch, the Zazi campaign launch for 21st May, where will it take place? And I want to concur with a question about the 5 out of 9 provinces. And who are the provinces we can see what here from Parliament says we can, what we can do through our committees in order to support your program to have all the provincial, the provinces covered. And then I would like to know, last question, in terms of your priorities, I'm not sure if your priorities in order, but your prevention, your programs, page 5, if your funding is also, your request of funding is also made in terms of the priorities, is it the priorities on page 5? Thank you.
Okay, follow up question?
Yeah.
I just forgot one question. On the Global Fund grant in South Africa for both pages, I can see that the Western Cape Department of Health has been given some money. And I don't see other problems. Can I hear the criteria there?
Okay. Yeah, thanks very much, members. I have some few questions on my side here. The first question is on the key NFP program strategic objective 4. You have listed important programs here. But what I'm asking myself is whether you the students at the tertiary level at universities, colleges, University of Technology, whether you have any program targeted to those students, because we do hear stories in that area as far as HIV and AIDS infection is concerned. We know that those kids are very vulnerable in that area. The second question will be on the allocation of funds to the provinces, the PCA. How is it allocated? Because it's so reflected in your presentation. The other question is on the reasons, if maybe you can elaborate on the reduction of PEPFAR funding so that we understand it much better. And lastly, the same question that was asked by Honorable Chwete. On the 5 provinces, what are the plans by the FANAC to ensure that other provinces' PCAs are functioning at also at district level? Yeah, excellent. You can respond.
Let me respond just to one question, the one about 4,000. I think the main organization or the main part of the work is done by FANAC. But the committee is supposed to be looking broadly transversal. So all those people that are under FANAC, we have got an obligation to call them as the different organizations, including this PCA. at some stage we need to call them here so that they can come and stay. So it's not only about Sanaa. We only call Sanaa because it's the main one for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But subsequent to this, we're going to be calling first workers, we're going to be calling male, we have your good name, and so on. And they're going to be coming here. So there's going to be a lot of work for us. I made a mistake here in Memor System. You know, she doesn't know some of the names from NA. So she kept on asking me. Then I was writing the names.
What is the problem?
So I wrote the names, I lost the name, Honorable Company. And then unfortunately when it came to you, I wrote the name, but she didn't mention it. I don't know why. Because I gave her the name that I but I made a mistake. Instead of a K, I put a G. That's why it's not good.
I
don't know
very much
that
I can
I'm not going to say what you do. Okay.
Again, thank you very much for the questions, and also thank you again for the opportunity to really kind of discuss with such an important house, you know, some of these big issues. I think perhaps I could start with, because there were a number of questions relating to the provincial council. The chairperson already directed that. It's really important to understand that, legally speaking, the provincial aid council are accountable to the provincial government. So there is no legal authority of the National Council over the Provincial Council. However, and I hope one day that will change, perhaps there's something in this committee that could be an ongoing subject, because it really disarms the National Council to be able to manage problems at the provincial level. Having said that, there's a lot to be said about bringing people together and working with them. So we have now started putting together a team of people that will work with the provincial council, and we have been working with the council. When I say five of the councils are functional, they all exist, all nine. But I can, our own assessment is that the KZN Council, Gauteng Council, the Eastern Cape Council, and the Western Cape Council are functional. They meet, they have their structures in place, they are sitting in place for. Now, the Northern Cape, which met yesterday and has a new head of the Secretariat, is starting to really function. So I'm taking a liberty there because they started, so that's why I said five. But as I said, in the Northwest, they actually have quite a lot of staff. 40 or 50 staff at the district level, at the council level. But there appears to be a complete lack of any leadership and organization and functionality. I've discussed this with NEC Mastike. He's also very concerned about this. Our Board of Trustees, which is meeting on Thursday next week, has asked us to present a plan to provide support to the council. We don't have authority over them, but if we can provide technical assistance, if we can provide a little bit of financial support, and work with them to do their legal status, their structure, and actually the first province that we'll be working with is Mpumalanga province. We had a plenary there on the 19th of April, and the Deputy President and the Premier had a discussion. The Premier is very committed to making the council work, and it's asked for our help. It's much better when the province asks for your help, then you can go in. It's not as though, as I said, we have legal authority. But I do think that it's a good idea to invite the provincial councils here, to discuss the level of functionality. Because as a number of you have said, honourable members, TB and HIV exist in all the provinces. When it comes to the specific...
Just to add a little bit of the head president is
providing relief to try and get premiers. So most of these companies are in the premier's office. He's been talking to premiers, and the reason that Greenery is moving to build some provinces is trying to mobilize communities, stakeholders in those provinces to get going. And that's the reason he's still in Kumaranga a lot. Because in Kumaranga, hopefully, it's just 8 pounds or something functional, etc. But the authority, the line authority to get things going is from the DP. And the DP has been writing letters to premiers and all of that. I think there's more than that.
In terms of some of the more specific questions, do we have enough resources at the local level? That's a good question. I think it's a mixed bag. There are some councils, some municipalities that actually do provide resources, like the Joburg municipality. It's got a strong aid council that's running effective programs. But in the majority, I think really it's only in KwaZulu-Natal province, and perhaps to some extent in Gauteng, where the mayors are engaged and providing resources and funding. Most of the municipalities have aid departments or social services directors, we are just completing a survey of how many district councils have got aid councils and how many local municipalities have got aid councils. And there seem to be a large number, but we'll publish a report on that quite soon to get a handle on it. But I think just overall, the municipalities need to add resources to this work. They don't really exist specifically for the council. And as you know, we can talk at the national and the provincial level. The real action is at the local level. If there's a drug stock out at the clinic, it's the local council that should be talking about it. If there's a teenage pregnancy problem in the school, is the local council. So that's really where, the thing needs to happen, and I agree with your comments on that. I think, like you, Honourable Member, many people are happy now to see the actual goals of SANAC, because then going forward we can actually report on those goals specifically. On the one example that you use about fostering dialogue, I do think that that's one area where SANAC has done well, and I'm happy to say this because actually it's been doing well before I arrived, and that is to bring civil society and government together to talk about all the issues. And now we've added the provincial level of the international stuff, so the implementers are there, and many of the large NGOs are now represented on the council. We also have many more of the scientists, of the doctors, nurses, coming to these council meetings. There were a few questions about the Global Fund grant. Once again, I'm glad you asked them because I can clarify this. So it's really important to understand that the Global Fund contributes only a small amount of funds. You can put that slide back up. And the main funds come from the government. So the next one on the program. So in the past, there wasn't a good alignment with what Global Fund was funding and what we need in this country. This funding application, and I should emphasize it's not yet approved by the Global Fund, is based on an analysis of what gaps we have in funding. So in the case of prisoners, it looks like a small proportion, but actually it's the Department of Health and Correctional Services that are really funding the basics, the core of the service. This is additional funding to provide certain services in the 11 large prisons. And it's also, donor funding is temporary. They can pick up their bags and go away, one day. But this is money that, in the future, could be taken over by government. But this is what we estimate as the gap for which we should ask donors to fund. It doesn't cover all the funding. When it comes to the NRASD, I see you've got an eagle eye, ma'am, to pick that up, the zero And that is, that actually was a problem. So the Global Fund has made agreements with all these principal recipients. In 2011, they had a problem with this recipient. There was a dispute between the Global Fund and the National Religious Association, and they didn't disperse any money for 1 year. So it was a problem. I'm happy to say that we worked together with the principal recipient and the Global Fund to resolve this matter, and included a lot of reports back and forth, but now the problem is resolved and those programs are back on track. But I wish I had an eye for a number like that. when it comes to the TB incidents, ma'am, you asked about that in 2012. Oh, Western Cape. So this is a historical fact, because when the Western Cape started its Global Fund grant, it was in 2003-2004, it was the only province that was providing antiretroviral treatment. The Global Fund was investing in that. They have been performing very well, and because of their good performance, their grant has been renewed. We have, in the new application, we have just agreed with the Western Cape that they will no longer be a principal recipient. They will phase out, because now the whole country needs these funds. All provinces need these funds. So they've agreed, the Western Cape has agreed that over the next 2.5 year cycle, they will exit and they will no longer be a recipient. They will still receive funds from the national department, Global Fund funds, but it will be equal across all provinces. And the Western Cape, I must say, they can be tough, but on this one, they were very reasonable. They understood that they can't be a recipient. Also, the Global Fund does not work with provinces any longer. It only works with national governments. So, well, Chairperson knows that I used to be in the Western Cape Department of Health. One sees things differently when one is at the provincial level. Now I'm at the national level, I see things differently. The main difference is that I think we have such a good HIV policy in this country that I think we can all be proud of it at the national level. And I don't want to continually praise the minister, but I think everybody can attest to the fact that his policy has been exactly right at the right time. When it comes to, once again, the key programs, the sex workers, in this country we don't really have programs for sex workers, for men who have sex with men, and good programs for citizens. The Global Fund is interested in financing programs for high-risk populations, neglected populations. So, in the new strategic plan, our country gives importance to these groups. But the budget cannot flow quickly to these programs. So this is really start-up funding. In the case of sex workers, and I emphasize, if they approve this proposal from us, we will reach about 30,000 sex workers in this country with services. But that's not the only funding. The lion's share of the funding comes from Dr. Pillay's conditional grant with the high transmission area budget, which is for the same populations to provide health services to them. And this is for peer education among sex workers, it's for training sex workers to deal with alcohol and violence, it's to sensitize the police not to harass the sex workers and to arrest them, you know. But also is to educate the male public who are using sex workers, who go to the sex worker and say, I'll pay more money if you don't use a condom. Mm-hmm. You know? It's for those kinds of programs, which we have neglected in this country. And I'm glad to say now that SAMAC, working with all departments, including the Justice Ministry, is working on a national sex worker program. We hope to launch this program in December. But first we want to get this funding approved. When it comes to the 2012 figures for TB, actually this is a reporting problem now. What happens is when you report for TV, it takes 1 year for the records to come through, especially because if you take treatment results, 6 months of treatment, if you start in 2012, the course is finished in 6 months, then the district health information system will collect that data, it takes 3 months, then it gets collected to the national level, it takes another 3 months. So the data is always 1 year behind. I'm sure that Dr. Clay and his team are compiling the statistics for 2012 as we speak, and will publish that. Who contributes to the Global Fund? Sir, you asked that question. 90% of the money comes from the rich country, with US government providing 1/3 of funding, the EU, Germany, the UK, all of these countries provide funding. But as you rightly pointed out, there is also contribution from other parties. The Gates Foundation provides some funding. And I'm happy to report that even though we are not a rich country, South Africa also provides a small contribution. I think it's about $1 million a year. $1 million a year. But as you can see, we'll get back $350 million, about $100 million a year. So that's a good deal, I think. But the Zanzi campaign launch is in the Gertsebande district in Mpumalanga. As you know, the minister has expressed serious concern about this issue, because suddenly it has become the highest prevalent district in the country. Usually, in the first five were always KwaZulu-Natal. You know, now Mpumalanga, Gertsebande district has taken the lead there. Dr. Pillay and a team from the SHIP program are trying to analyze the reasons for that. And then, ma'am, you asked about the FET colleges and the universities. And actually, this is a problem that we're dealing with. They used to receive funds from the US government, and they are one of the parties that has lost their funds. So a good program that was doing FET condoms, and Dr. Gillet and myself are trying to solve this problem. There's a possibility that we could give them some of the funding from the Global Fund to tide them over. We also made a submission to the Treasury to finance some of that, which was not approved. But to add, give the other members some of your feeling, you know, there are now about 600,000 students in FET colleges. They are at high risk. As you know, there are about 900,000 students in universities. This is a large population of 1.5 million young South Africans. And I met with the principal of the universities to discuss this about 2 months ago. They are taking this seriously, but they're not committing funds, enough funds to this. So we do have a problem here. There was a study that showed that 10% of university young women at universities have a sugar daddy. So, you know, these kinds of things need to be dealt with. I mean, a young person goes to university, come out with a degree, but they come out with a degree and with HIV. You know, that's just a tragedy. So we are working with HEAIDS, it's called the Higher Education AIDS Program, to try to address some of it. Dr. Pillay is working hard at least getting their testing program back on track. Allocation of funds to PCAs, you brought it up again. It's a mixed bag. As I said, in the Northwest, there's a lot of money from the provincial government to the PCA, and it's not effective. It's not really being used properly. But there are provinces where there is no funding. The Western Cape has very little funding for the PCA. But because some of their departments work well, you know, they function well, a small, they only have one person, but they meet regularly and they do their work in a regular basis. But I would say it's worth a visit to the KZN Provincial Aid Council. We have been visiting regularly, and it's impressive. The Premier runs it, you know, very effectively. All the mayors are there. I went to the last Gauteng Provincial Aid Council. Also, you can just see that it's effective. yesterday the mayor launched, the premier launched a campaign in Gauteng for orphans and vulnerable children. In the last 12 months, there have been 700,000 children with HIV messages through the work of the Gauteng AIDS Council. That's the kind of result we want to see, you know, and not more structures and more meetings and more, you know. Anyway, I'm going to stop at that point. Thank you very much.
Maybe I should put it on this university and FCT. There's something that has come up with this. That's what it is. I think it's another idea. I mean, it has started in Western, the minister has been talking about this. That's what it is. It was obvious that I don't even come up.
I'll just add a few things. With respect to local government, the Salva used to have projects on the HIV with the provincial structures as well. And that seems not to be working very well. I think we need to figure out how we can Salva. We have a provincial association. We get local government going. And I think part of the reason is Salva has not given the project enough support. And maybe this is through the funds that kind of basis so they can see whether or not they can get something for Salva. With respect to the program that the minister, not the minister, the deputy minister of the former deputy minister of higher education launched the First Things First campaign at on the BITS campus. And that's been launched on every campus of all the universities. So now we are starting the ACT course. With respect to taking new orientation program, especially the first part of the year. Mobile that goes to HCT. We need to find some way to the start sustaining that throughout the year. So it's not just a one-off event at the beginning of each year. I think one of the honorable members asked about what challenges stand up to. I think we covered that in the other two that we had. Honorable
Responsible. Once again, thank you for that question. I think the main challenge really is the absence of a strong legislative framework under which SANAC operates. I think the second question, the second problem really is, and I know that the minister, you know, has raised this with me, is that we don't have any more high profile of messages and information in the public eye with HIV that we had a few years ago. But that requires resources. And, you know, within SANAC at the moment, our resources are really only limited to run the committees of SANAC and to do the basic functioning. It's a small budget that comes from the health department. So I think those are two challenges. I also think that, you know, the third challenge is linked to starting a new institution. Because it's been there for a long time. But as an institution, you know, we really are... when I arrived, I mean, we didn't have an operating bank account. You know, funds were in a trust fund. I'm glad to say that. But there are teething problems and there are challenges of getting the institution running. Within that, probably the most important challenge is to recruit skilled staff. The last 2 days I've appointed two finance staff, you know, to do the accounts. It takes a bit of energy and effort, and most of our, in my strategic plan, which I've presented to my trustees, we did say that the first year will be focused on getting the basic operation done. But now we need to do much more, and resources will be a big challenge. Unless there are other challenges that you think we have. I mean, one other challenge is that we have a lot of sectors, civil society sectors, and you know, we would like those sectors to be more effective, to have sector plans, to implement programs, and I think we still have quite a way to go there. People are, as they said in the diagnostic for the National Development Plan in South Africa, we're very good at having good ideas, and we're not very good at implementing them. And I think, you know, my instructions from the Deputy President, the Minister, are to focus on implementation. But that does require additional
resources. Just one thing, there's a question about KEPFA funding, the reduction of KEPFA funding and its impact. So, over the last 2 years, because this was a signal from the US government a while ago that they were going to continue reducing funding in the land. So, over the last 2 years, led by the KEPFA system, we've had a series of meetings with the ambassador, the people in Washington, try and understand firstly what's the motivation for reducing the funding, and secondly how to do it. If there's an agreement that there's no way out of not reducing, how to reduce it so that the impact is less. So the agreement we reached was reluctantly, I must say, and because they've been raising two things. One is the global economic situation and its impact on the U.S. economy. And the second is that I think with the formation of BRICS, South Africa being a middle-income country, there's a feeling that there are more deserving countries to the more participation, and that they should rather prioritize those countries for funding. So it wasn't like they were punishing us for it. We also seem to suggest that because our programs are now well entrenched, they're running well, we are seeing good impact from all the investments we made, they think that South Africa can do it on their own. But they're not removing funding entirely. So over the next, between 2012 and 2017, we agreed on a reduction from the current level, which is just under $500 million a year, to $270 million. And that will take the form largely of technical assistance. So they won't pay for drugs and labs and human resources in South Africa, which is a significant part of the cost. We've agreed then with our national treasury that we will absorb those costs so that patients won't be worse off. So the agreement we have is that if there's a place where patients are worse off than they would have been before, then we would have another solution. So it's clear, you know, they'd be funding far more issues around prevention going forward, and that the department will pick up treatment. And if you look at our budget, which will be presented next week, you'll see that there's an additional money to the national department as well. Make up the difference from the increased tech costs. And it's not been without challenges trying to get the transition right. But I think in working with the provinces and with some of our civil society partners, we've been able to smooth the transition. Last time, thanks.
I think we understand that they trade. This is a good reason that you get why you are having that funding in your budget. But I think the key problem is that when that funding was coming, it was not only serving South Africa, it was serving even our neighbors, which were not very clear as to how much it was getting from us. And ourselves, we knew that it was going to come down at a big stage, so we prepared ourselves. But I'm not sure if the countries around us, because that's the reason they're giving that, they want to go to poorer areas, but they're not going to do so we're going to continue having resources from Botswana coming to us. And that's our main problem as to how are we going to mitigate that problem. So they're going to continue coming to us. Are we prepared to making sure that are we rich enough to continue? But probably it's not for now to answer. But it's the argument that I'm going to be using when we meet.
With your permission, just to say, I think the ministers have seen that, you know, we have to deal with some of these diseases regionally. So in March there was a meeting called to the Minister of Health of Swaziland and Ireland to look at TB in the region. And we are planning to have a regional summit on TB, precisely where we can mention. But there's a lot of movement of people across the borders. Our borders are very porous. And I'm thinking if you look at the petitions in Swane, for example, in Joburg, you'll see that a number of people from across the border will come to deliver in our facilities and then go back into it. Mm-hmm. Of course, we don't make provision for that because we say, you know, we're budgeting for South Africa. So it's a big challenge, but we'll see how we manage it, both politically and also on the health
part. I'm not sure whether all the questions have been responded to. I mean, it looks like they were. But let me allow for the last set of questions, if there are any questions that are still remaining. Honorable Joseph, Honorable Tracy.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. It's very interesting this point about reducing poverty, which means that besides the grant that you refer to, we must refer to not poverty but the upliftment of our people when government builds houses. Now, when you build a house, you are busy with a human being and his family. The current RTP houses that government is building, and I'm particularly referring to the recent TV as well, or other provinces where TV is, that social condition is because people are staying in shacks, there's no windows and all that, and they're in the same house, on the same room, and that possibility of a TV screen and so on. Are you also talking to that apartment, that social, but also housing that you create, that house that in future will take the pressure off the spreading of HIV? Because I see it as from a social point of view, just a continuation of not necessarily poverty, but social conditions that is not conducive to remove these figures and status and issues that they are dealing with, relating to TB in particular. Thank you.
Chair, my question is very similar to that of the... I have two questions. That is, whether you do have interdepartmental collaboration. I'm thinking of agriculture and other departments that might assist in terms of making sure that we fight this disease. And the other one is, I'm looking at the slide number 17. Slide number 17. Maybe I didn't understand rank scoring and two, I'm looking at the tick mortality situation 2010 and now it's 2013, and I want to check what is the situation now. It's 2013 now, and that was 2010. And again, I'm very happy to share that you say typical out of this. So that are infected. So it's not easy now to understand, you know, whether the province is going down. You only see the numbers of deaths, but those that are infected, if you could next time have those that are infected with TB, because it would be easy to see whether there's improvement or not, if you know the numbers that are infected. Thank you very much.
Now, the point is certain, then for the point. With respect to the issues raised about housing and infection control, or lack of infection control, poor housing, especially poor people, and also the issue of interdepartmental collaboration, the Department of Health co-chairs the social cluster. We have all these other government departments that relate to health and education. We co-chair with monthly meetings to look at things that are cross-cutting. Because as the honourable member suggests, there are lots of things that are cross-cutting. You know? We have no direct control over, like housing or transport. So that's the one thing. The second is that in terms of our TB program, we're focusing on case finding, having seen it as early as possible. So we have people now, the war-based object team, going into communities, providing information, opening windows, popping your sleeves, those pop out, you know, so that the TV facility is not spread easily. But you know, working with communities, is, we all know it's very important to do, but it's not easy either. So that's one of the reasons in terms of the re-engineering of primary health care, the minister has asked that we include TB and the control of TB as one of the key functions of community health workers, as well as school health workers, so that we also do the screening in school. And we've also asked them that all the HCT campaigns, HIV Confirmed Testing campaigns, also include TB. So while we're looking at the structural issues, which are more difficult to change, we need to change also the behavior of our people in terms of just cough hygiene, if you will. The second is around the ranking. This data comes from Get Certificate. So it's a review of Get Certificate. And that's why Dr. Villa was saying, it depends on what the doctor writes in the Get Certificate. That's what we pick up when that South Africa does this review. And it's 2010, because that's the latest year they have been able to review all the death certificates that they're sending. It's always behind, because of the amount of work we need to collect all the death certificates, and do the counting of the numbers. But what we have been seeing is that we've been reporting fewer new cases of TB. You know, historically, we've reported over 400,000 new cases. But now we seem to be getting around 380,000 for the last 2 to 3 years. Now we're not sure why that is, what's happening. Mm-hmm. We'd like to think that the incidence of TB, the new cases are coming down, but we're not sure. And that's why the minister has asked us to strengthen our case finding. Don't look for people with TB. Don't wait for them only to come to your facility after many, many months of having TB. But I'll ask that something like all that.
I take it that even those who do not take them, it's not because they don't have something to ask, but it's because they think that the question can ask and the answer to that. So thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much, Professor Dr. We really will keep on liaising with each other. But I think for now we know what Sanak is all about. But we'll be following up with all the departments. All the departments are going to be high level. And in fact, I'm thinking that maybe the Department of Correctional Services should follow the defense sector. Especially that they are sitting in those rooms with poor ventilation.
Yes.
And we're told that TB is very bad. And we want to know what the department is doing to make sure that there's ventilation there. I suppose that most of the time when we call some of the people, we will be calling you to speak with them. Not all the time, but at certain times. So thank you very much for the information that they've given us. Remember, thank you very much on a Friday morning. Time for you to go to Greenwood now. Somebody was telling me that it's for the young ones. I'm not sure if they're young enough. My contact, thank you very much. I think we enjoyed sharing together. Thanks everybody. The meeting is over. I think we said that our meeting is on Friday. Thank you, everybody. My contact, I'm asking for forgiveness. Give it to the